From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in Orange County, California, 1944. A third grade student named Sylvia Mendez was denied access to the 17th Street School near her family's home because it had become known as the White School. Sylvia and her brothers were told they were too dark to attend. Sylvia is of Mexican and Puerto Rican descent. This was a time of harsh segregation. Pools, parks, and movie theaters carried signs that said, "No dogs or Mexicans allowed." But Sylvia's parents and four other families hired a lawyer to help them fight to desegregate schools. After all, more than 5,000 Hispanic American children in Orange County alone were affected by this segregation. In court, the superintendent of schools said, quote, "Mexicans should be segregated like pigs in pig pens because they carry lice and diseases." Well, after a year, the judge ruled in the family's favor, and they won an appeal in 1947. And their case became a kind of example, a precedent for future decisions, including one you might know, Brown v. Board of Education, which came 7 years later. So why do we all know Brown v. Board of Education, but not the story of Sylvia Mendez? Well, that's changing slowly. This weekend, a new play based on a book will tell this story in Rochester, and Sylvia Mendez will be in Rochester for the play's opening. The play is called Separate is Never Equal, based on the book of the same name. It will be performed this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the MUC, the Multi-Use Community Cultural Center on Atlantic Avenue. This hour, we're going to talk about the history of segregation and the legacy of this case with our guests in studio. Let me welcome them now. Annette Ramos is the founder and executive director of the Rochester Latino Theater Company. She's the co-writer and producer of Separate is Never Equal. Welcome, Annette.
Hello. Great to see you.
And Don Bartolo is here. Don is the director and co-writer of Separate is Never Equal. And Don, great to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Jose Cruz is here, member of the Rochester City School Board. Jose, welcome to you.
Thanks, Evan. Thanks for having us.
And on the phone with us, honored to have Sylvia Mendez celebrating her 80th birthday. Sylvia, happy birthday. Thanks for joining the program.
Thank you.
Felicidades.
Thank you. Felicidades.
Happy birthday.
Well, thank you.
It's a nice round number. And I'll tell you what, Sylvia, I will be the first to tell you, I did not know your name and your story, and I'm bothered by that, because when I read about it and I learn about it, I feel like we should all be learning your story in schools. So if you don't mind, I'd like you to kind of take us through more of the history of what happened starting in 1944. You were in third grade, and you know, for you at 8 years old, how much of that made any sense to you? How much were you aware of what was going on?
Well, at the time, not too much. All I knew was that I couldn't go to that beautiful school with that wonderful playground. That was what was in my mind. It wasn't until I went to a white school, and this little boy comes up and starts telling me that I don't belong there, and I didn't realize. I had never, you know, even though I was in court every single day, I never realized what my parents were fighting for. I thought they were just fighting for me to get into that beautiful school with a wonderful playground. It wasn't until we finally integrated and I went to the white school, and this little boy comes and tells me I don't belong there because I'm a Mexican. And I start crying, and I go in and tell my mother, "Mother, I don't want to go to that school. They don't want us there." That my mother tells me, she starts talking to me. She says, "Sylvia, don't you realize what we were fighting for? Don't you know that you are just this... as good as that little boy, and under God, we're all equal. And of course, you're going to go back to school." And from then on, I continued to realize what they had fought for.
Sylvia, now looking back, do you look at what the school superintendent said, the terrible things that were on signs, all of those things? Does that feel like a different world to you, or do you feel like that America is it still not that far away from that time?
Well, I feel that, you know, what Brown and Mendez fought for was for de jure. By law, we cannot be segregated. And I feel that we are more segregated now than we were in 1944. It seems like we've gone a full circle around. You know, we're celebrating this year the 70-year anniversary of Mendez versus Westminster. And as I go around speaking at schools to the students, I find out that we are completely segregated in some schools where the two schools named after my parents, they're 100% Latino. So we're 100% segregated in some of the schools. So we have a lot of work to do yet.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about that this hour, the state of segregation today. with our guests in studio here. We'll also talk about this performance coming up. You know, you had a book in 2014, and now this play, Separate is Never Equal. What is it like for you, Sylvia, to see, you know, literature and theater performances telling your family's story?
Well, I'm so excited because, you know, I have been going around for, like, close to 20 years trying to talk to everybody about this case. You know, I remember when I was a registered nurse for 33 years, and when my mother got real sick, she said, and I retired. I was assistant nursing director at the hospital, and I retired to take care of her. And she would tell me, Sylvia, you know, we fought this case, and nobody even talks about it. You know, and this is history of California. This is history of the United States, how California was the first state to be integrated. And somebody has to go around and start talking about it. So I started going around talking about it in schools, and it has finally, I'm so happy, finally we're getting a play out of it. And when Duncan came and asked me, Sylvia, can I write about it? I said, absolutely. The more books that are written about it, the more plays we see, the more people know about this case, the history of the United States that so many people are not aware of.
Boy, no question about it. Again, as I said off the top of the hour, most of our listeners know Brown v. Board of Education. Very few know the story of Sylvia Mendez and her family. And that should change if you understand the significance of this case. Sylvia's on the line with us. She's going to be here for the first performance. That is on Friday. Again, we'll get to that in a second. Let me just also ask you, Sylvia, because you mentioned after your family wins the case, then won the appeal, and you go to the quote-unquote white school as the student of Mexican and Puerto Rican descent, and you had the student tell you that you're Mexican, you don't belong, and I know that hurt you. But for the most part, what was the reaction of white students? I mean, that was one incident. Were there more like it? Was it majority not welcoming? Were most welcoming? How would you characterize what you experienced?
Well, what I experienced was that, and what I found out, you know, was that people, we're not born with hatred in our hearts. We're not born with prejudice or bigots. That it's sometimes instilled in us, you know, by society or our family or whoever. And because before you knew it, we were invited to their homes and to their parties. And I went on to school in that same school that boy confronted me. I stayed there and went on to integrated schools the rest of my life. And that was from then on. And, you know, went on to college, became a nurse, worked for 33 years as a registered nurse. And, you know, and when I retired was when I started talking about this case.
Annette Ramos, when's the first time you heard Sylvia Mendez's story?
Well, Don Bartolo brought it to me. And one of the commitments that the Rochester Latino Theater Company has is to really give voice to Latino voices in through the art form of theater, but really in American history. And the moment I read the book, I said yes, because I was extremely elated and excited to hear her story. And a profound personal impact is that she's half Puerto Rican and half Mexican. So being Puerto Rican is a very unique identity in American identity. We're born U.S. citizens. We have the right to vote if we live in any of the states, mainland USA, and it's still to this very day a very complicated and complex identity. And so part of what the Rochester Latino Theater Company is committed to doing is to continuing to reach and educate non-Latinos and to give Latinos the cultural pride of their American history.
Don, when's the first time you heard Sylvia's story?
Well, I got this book from my daughter, Kristen, who knows that I collect children's books about civil rights issues. This book was written by Duncan Tanatiu, a beautiful name. He's Mexican, he's a young man, and he's written a number of books. I sat down in my chair and I read this book. I jumped up, I went downstairs, I ordered another copy for Annette Ramos, and I contacted her and said, I'm going to send you a book. And when you get it, you read it and tell me what you think, because I think this book should be a play.
And this was, what, a couple of years ago, right?
This was January 2015 that I got the book. Duncan's book came out in 2014, so it's a very recent book.
And Don, don't you think, reading this story, do you feel like I do? You're going, where has this story been in our history books? Why do I not know this
Absolutely.
Story?
But I've learned a lot since then, mostly from Annette, that the Latino voice is often hidden more than we realize. And as a consultant for education and worked all over the country, I've seen exactly what Duncan is talking about in all the schools that I've visited. Yeah, and I understand it. But it's something that all of us need to learn more about. The definitive book on Mendez versus Westminster was written by a Latino lawyer, and not a single one of her lawyer friends ever heard of this case.
Mendez v. Westminster. Look it up. Just read some of the notes on it. Easy to find information on it. And you start, like I said, I kind of gave you the capsule of it at the opening of the hour. But how significant was this case? I'm not trying to overplay this, how surprised I am that I've never heard of it, because the case became an example for Brown v. Board of Education. Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, who argued Brown v. Board, used arguments that he had filed for Mendez on behalf of the NAACP, right? So
that's right. One thing, too, that the governor of California in 1947 was Earl Warren. Earl Warren became the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. This case, Mendez versus Westminster, it set the framework for Brown versus Board of Education.
Without this, without Mendez v. Westminster, we may never have gotten Brown v. Board. Possible.
Possible.
Correct. And the other thing is, you know, we often think of the civil rights movement as a black-white issue. There are brown faces in those in that struggle for desegregation, for equal opportunities, especially in the educational arena. And that was something that the minute I read it, I knew this story had to be told. And Don and I really worked for months in this very collaborative, creative process of writing this story. He sat, I stood most of the time, and it was exciting for us because we really wanted to capture Sylvia's voice and Sylvia's point of view. How many 9-year-old Latino girls and boys are in our very own school system today and don't know their own history and their own impact of their cultural, of their culture in American history?
Let me give you a yes but to this, and I want to turn to Jose Cruz, school board member. Yes but. Annette's right. How many young Latino boys and girls don't even know Sylvia Mendez in this story? And they should. But it shouldn't just be the Latino students. Jose, my concern is, you know, we are pretty segregated today, and we're going to talk about that in a moment here. Mm-hmm. But white students should know Sylvia Mendez's name. And do you agree, Jose, the point that Annette and Don were making, that we often talk black and white history for understandable reasons, but brown gets left out?
Oh, absolutely. And I think this is a wonderful story about an 8-year-old who changed the world, if you think about it. And I think it's the important part of the story is for our children to understand that an 8-year-old can change the world. And so, yes, and I think a lot of work is being done now to look at cross-cultural curriculums in the country, so that we can include the Latino voices amongst other voices as well, obviously. But that those kinds of stories are hidden, and I think it's a responsibility as educators and as school districts to bring those up. And I really want to thank Annette and Don because they have really brought a great story to this community and something that we certainly should appreciate.
Yeah, I mean, I recall, you know, you see the pictures, the segregation, the American South, really all parts of our country. You know, we have a history of it. And you go back to the 50s and 60s, civil rights movement. We saw separate but equal, you know, the drinking fountains, restaurants, all kinds of things. But just think about that in the 1940s in California. The fact that parks and pools and movie theaters carried those signs that said no dogs or Mexicans allowed. Amazing. And that a school superintendent would say Mexicans should be segregated like pigs in pig pens. So, Sylvia, you're coming to Rochester, let's see here, on Friday, yes? Is that right?
Yes, correct.
Okay, and what are you hoping that people get from this play? What are you hoping the audience takes with them?
Well, the history. The history is being told. And it is so fortunate to see a play. I think it's wonderful. I'm so excited. I can hardly wait to get there.
Well, let's talk about what's coming up this weekend. Then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the MUC, the Multi-Use Cultural Community Center on Atlantic. Annette Ramos and Don Bartolo are bringing you this story. And so, Annette, what are the details on when people can see it?
Well, we are almost sold out for Friday night's VIP reception, at which Sylvia will be present at. We have about 5 tickets left. So if you're online right now, you should be on your computer buying those last tickets. We also have a 7:30 Saturday night show. And then we have 2 matinees, a Saturday matinee and a Sunday at 2 p.m. The exciting part about our Sunday matinee is that we'll also be having a farm worker organization from Spencerport. We always donate tickets to an organization or do that community outreach component. So we're going to have in our audience 20 migrant families and their children, and they will also be selling some of their fruit that day and vegetables that they've actually grown. So we always try to look at how do we connect, how do we give back, how do we engage.
All right, listeners, if you want to call the program and talk about the state of segregation in schools today, if you want to weigh in on Sylvia's story, whether you knew it or not, and you're learning at this hour, you can call the program. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You're hearing from Annette Ramos and Don Bartolo, the co-writers of Separate is Never Equal, that's showing at the MUC this weekend. Jose Cruz, member of the Rochester City School Board, and on her 80th birthday, Sylvia Mendez, civil rights activist and icon, on the phone with us. Let me get our first phone call. It's Simeon in Rochester. Go ahead, Simeon.
Yes, thank you very much. Great show. Mrs. Mendez, I want to thank you and your family for your courageous role in helping to change the force of history for the good. I can't help but think as I'm listening to this topic, the application to the current political climate, we have a candidate for president who has spent a lot of his energy dividing people and engaging in slurs against Hispanics and others, talking about a judge sitting on a case who should be disqualified because of his supposed Hispanic origins. And I'm just wondering if you think in today's climate, is this a safe climate for Hispanics and Mexicans, whether it's school children and elsewhere? And how do you see the lessons from the case that you so courageously brought to some of these disturbing currents that we are perceiving and experiencing today?
Go ahead, Sylvia. What do you think?
Oh, well I see the same thing recurring. We were being called names at that time, and it seems like somebody's calling us names again all over the United States, this one person. And I see that, the mindset has just stayed with some people, but it doesn't. But I think that justice and liberty and freedom for all will prevail, and that we will see that not everybody thinks that way. And that, when I tell the students when I go and speak, if you're fighting for something that's good, for justice and for the right thing, people will join you. And I think that in the end, we will see a victory that comes out that people, all believe in the same thing for justice, liberty, and freedom here in the United States.
Well, let me ask the panel what they think about some of Simeon's comments. And as I do that, I'll just mention a couple of the news headlines that have come down in the last hour. You've got a lot of media outlets asking for right now, for example, Republican leaders, are you willing to rescind your endorsement of Donald Trump based on his attack on this judge? Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House and a Republican leader, says that claiming a person can't do their job because of their race is sort of the textbook definition of a racist comment. It is absolutely unacceptable, but he tells the New York Times an hour ago he will not rescind his endorsement of Donald Trump. Chris Christie, governor of New Jersey, and of course one of Mr. Trump's closest allies, says this is being overblown. He says, I'm not going to get into critiquing a campaign. What matters is winning and losing. This is a kerfuffle, and he says Trump is not a racist. But now you've got Lindsey Graham and others asking Republican leaders to maybe rethink their endorsement of Donald Trump. Senator Jeff Flake saying he cannot endorse Trump. So this has been at least a few days where there's been some wavering among Republican leadership, even though Paul Ryan's saying he's not going to rescind it. Jose Cruz, do you think we're overblowing the questions on this judge, or do you think that this is an example of the way people of Latino descent are treated? And this is an American, by the way, this judge.
Yeah. It's absolutely despicable when you think about it. To call out somebody because of their their cultural heritage as being unable to function is it's a travesty. And I think that it's an indication, however, of what Donald Trump is really representing as he's going forward in this process. And the good positive thing is that he's being called out on it by not only folks, you know, outside of his party, but people inside of his party, because I think it is something. I mean, think about it in terms of Republicans having to support somebody who's out there saying these kinds of things, and it puts a lot of folks on on edge, and rightly so. But I think it's also a clear sort of a bellwether kind of thing in terms of some of the thinking that is happening in this country. We can't forget and overshadow that, because there is some of this thinking still. And the good thing is that we're at least bringing it up now. We're talking about it. We're recognizing it. And we're going through a process of trying to heal this. But it's just not a good way to go about trashing, you know, potentially the largest minority group in this country.
Don Bartolo, yeah. Here's Mitch McConnell. Just recently, Senator McConnell saying, "We are all encouraging Donald Trump to quit the outrageous comments, to concentrate on unifying his party, and talk about the issues that the American people are concerned about." And my concern with that comment from Mitch McConnell is he's acting like this is a sideshow that people are not concerned about, when what Sylvia Mendez has done is set the stage for all of us to be concerned, to make sure that we don't have leadership treating people differently based on their race, right? That's not a sideshow. That's one of the issues the American people are concerned
exactly.
about.
Exactly. And one of the things you can learn from this book is this. One of the virtues of a public school is that people from different cultural heritage can learn about each other. And when you change that, the way we have in so many schools, it is very difficult for some children to learn about not only their own cultural heritage, but that of others. And then the second point, and perhaps this is what our politicians don't know, is that when you learn that, the only difference you can make is when you stand up for something that is right. And not because you feel you've got to say something to get an advantage, but that you believe it. And that is a second problem. Maybe we're aware of it, but are we willing to stand up for it? And we can see right now that there's a great deal of confusion about what to do with some of these issues.
Annette Ramos, what do you think?
Well, one of the things that the Rochester Latino Theater Company, when we took on this project, really looked at is the idea of not building walls, but building bridges to understanding. So we're not writing, we didn't really embark on this project because of the Latino community. We embarked on it because of the political atmosphere right now in America, the us versus them. And the idea that we're so different is really based on ignorance and fear, and that proposal of if I don't claim mine, I won't have it. So coming to see this play and reading this book and really knowing and seeking out the understanding of Sylvia's story is really what America really needs to look at today. Overall, is really grasping that we're more alike. We all eat rice. We all want the best education for our children. We all want, you know, the American dream. And we're all Americans. And so that's part of the challenge, is not separating, but bridging to understanding and engaging and educating.
I see the phone ringing again. Let's remind you, if you want to join the program, it's 844-295-TALK. Toll free, 844-295-8255. We're going to get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back with Sylvia Mendez, who's become a civil rights icon, for the story of Mendez v. Westminster. It's not a court case you probably know off the top of your head, but I think probably we all should. That's how I feel, since I've learned about it just in the last few days. The case that really laid the framework for Brown v. Board of Education, and a remarkable story of what Sylvia and her family and local families in Orange County, California, went through in the 1940s when it came to desegregation. Sylvia's on the line with us, celebrating her 80th birthday with Connections, which is the best way to do it, in my opinion. And she will be in Rochester this weekend on Friday for the opening of Separate is Never Equal at the Muck. Friday, Saturday, and two shows on, Friday, two shows Saturday, one matinee, one night show, and then a matinee on Sunday, all at the Muck if you want to check that out. Let's get our only break of the hour and come back to your phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, sexual assault at Stanford, and the results of that case has shocked the country, with the judge ruling that the perpetrator of a sexual assault deserves only 6 months, not 6 years in prison, because the rest of his life could be impacted and he won't be a danger to others. Is the judge putting the perpetrator over the victim? We talk about privilege and more next hour.
This week on Finding Tammy Jo, the podcast. Who was the free-spirited, gregarious teenager that so captivated everyone around her, in both life and in death? Subscribe to Finding Tammy Jo, the podcast, and learn more at WXXINews.org.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Want to let you know a couple of things before we dive back into our conversation. You just heard my colleague Veronica Volk mentioning the Finding Tammy Jo podcast. It is really amazing to see the traction that has gained, and I think it's because so often the news media focuses not on the victims but on perpetrators of crimes. That's one of our subjects next hour as we talk about the Stanford sexual assault case. But what that Finding Tammy Jo podcast has done is put a real life story behind a human tragedy, and it has been riveting, at times heartbreaking, at times inspiring, and I encourage you to check it out, findingtammyjo.com, and it's easy to subscribe, and I hope you do that. And also, if you miss any parts of Connections throughout the week, producer Megan Mack and I put together Weekend Connections, which is a weekend podcast that helps encapsulate some of the moments of the week that we think you ought to hear if you miss them. And certainly, Sylvia Mendez will be on there this weekend, but you'll hear a lot more. In fact, every weekend. And it's sort of a svelte version, so it's 15 to 20 minutes. It's perfect for treadmill or your drive somewhere, as long as your hand's free. So lots of ways that we're reaching you via podcast. I encourage you to do that. On Twitter, Matt writes to us and says, Evan, 8 or 80 years of age, Sylvia Mendez is a rock star. Thank you and your family, Sylvia, for the fight for equality. Sylvia, that comes from Matt on Twitter. He says you're a rock star. Maybe you never wanted to be a rock star, but you are.
Thank you. Sounds great.
But I'll tell you, I think a lot I think a lot of people are feeling that way. And we want to talk in a moment more about sort of the current climate of segregation. But let me grab another phone call. This is John in Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. You know, I have to say, this is a good program and definitely a timely topic. But I have to say, I think Donald Trump's taking a hit by a couple of your callers and a couple of your panelists. Donald Trump is in favor of legal immigration, and he'll embrace Hispanics, whoever immigrates to this country legally. His beef is with illegal immigration, and I think he's clear on that opinion.
Okay, so I take the point there, John, but let me ask you a question. Do you agree with Paul Ryan that Donald Trump's comments about the judge in the Trump U case is the textbook definition of racism, yes or no?
Oh, not at all. Not at all.
So Paul Ryan's wrong, Mitch McConnell's wrong, Joe Scarborough's wrong, David French is wrong.
That's not racism. He's a private citizen, and he should be concerned. This judge is part of a bar organization in I think California called La Raza, some committee on La Raza of attorneys, and La Raza really to me is sort of a prejudiced organization. La Raza itself stands for the race.
Okay, so hold on, John. Let's back it up here and let's keep it to Donald Trump's remarks, because if you saw his exchange with Jake Tapper on CNN, Jake Tapper asked him 24 times a separate version of why he's concerned about this judge. And Donald Trump didn't mention La Raza like you did. Donald Trump said the judge is a Mexican. He's a Mexican descent. He's an American, by the way. And he mentioned the fact that Donald Trump said, I want to build a wall. Mexicans know I want to build a wall. They don't like it. They may be opposed to it. So the idea is Donald Trump's policies will make certain people unsuitable to do their jobs if he is involved. You don't think that's race-based? No?
Well, No, I don't see it that way. I think this is a
Donald Trump sees it that way.
Lawsuit, and he is concerned that this judge could be prejudicial. He's a first generation Mexican American, and he's a member of this group called La Raza, at least this committee called La Raza, and that La Raza is a prejudiced organization, and I think Trump should be concerned about that. And I don't think it's not a racist opinion at all.
Why do you think Paul Ryan called this a textbook definition of racism? Do you think Paul Ryan wants Donald Trump to get taken down?
I think he might. Yeah, I do. I don't agree with Paul Ryan. I think Paul Ryan is wrong on that. And if Mitch McConnell said the same thing, Mitch McConnell is wrong on that. They are not the biggest Donald Trump fans.
Yeah, I know. But it's also important to point out, Paul Ryan said he thinks this was textbook racism, but I'm still going to stand by him and support him. He didn't say, this guy's an idiot, I'm not going to endorse him. He said, I endorsed him, and I'm not going to rescind my endorsement, but this is textbook racism.
It's not textbook racism. Paul Ryan is full of baloney.
Okay. John, thanks for the phone call. But I think that if you say that someone, because of their racial background, cannot do a job if you're involved with it because of your own policies, I think everyone is seeing that. That's about race. And Donald Trump has doubled down on that. So I'm not trying to misquote Donald Trump. I'm trying to quote him directly. And I'm trying to quote actual conservatives who are concerned about him. Sylvia Mendez, do you want to weigh in on this? I mean, do you feel like Donald Trump's getting a raw deal?
Well, I don't want to get involved into politics right now because I am involved in all the schools. And,
sure.
And so I try not to get involved into politics. I just know that justice will prevail in the end, and we will find out very soon in November when we have the elections. So I really don't have much to say about it right now.
Okay. You know, and I got an email from someone saying I'm being unfair to Trump, and I would never say the same about Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, if she said the same thing Trump did, she would get the same reaction from me. And by the way, I was very clear when Hillary Clinton and Bill de Blasio did their horrible comedy sketch a few months ago where they brought up CPT, which was a joke referring to quote-unquote colored people time, which is a slur against African-Americans and punctuality. And then they said, oh, no, it was cautious politician time. I thought that was horrible, and I thought President Obama was right to rip it at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. So same thing. But I don't know that that's the degree of what we're talking about in the Trump judge case. Let's not get sidetracked anymore by Donald Trump. Let's go back to what we're talking about this hour. Sylvia Mendez is a civil rights icon. She's turning 80 years old today. We're thrilled to have her on the line with us, and she's coming to Rochester this weekend. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, there are four performances that you can see of the new play, Separate is Never Equal, which tells the story of, well, let's ask Don and Annette Ramos, who wrote this.
Right.
Don, I keep saying it kind of tells Sylvia's story, but, you know, what's the frame of Separate is Never Equal?
The play frame is that Sylvia Mendez, who's played by two young fifth graders, Nicole Celevreste and Isabella Martinez, they are going to tell the story. And we've arranged for them to be on a swing. And every time they speak, they're going to tell something about what happened. We have 16 Latino actors from ages 6 to 65. 16 of those actors are Latino, and 5 are Anglo. The cast has learned a great deal about this story from each other. We had a little potluck Sunday after rehearsal, and the best Latino food was made by Tony Eckel. It's not Latino. It was great. No, the play, and that's what I want to emphasize, it brings the book to life. Now, I've been sending tweets back and forth to Duncan. And the last tweet he wrote, and Sylvie, he says hello to you in the tweet, but he also says,
thank you.
Yes, I know Sylvia knows Duncan very well. He says, thank you for bringing my book to life. And that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to show what that would look like if you play it out for an audience. And as soon as the play is over, we're going to have a chance for audience members to talk with the cast, to talk to Annette, to talk to me, and have a chance to deal with their feelings about this. Yes.
It's really an educational opportunity all the way around. The cast, and that's one of the things that the Rochester Latino Theater Company is committed to, is educating our cast so that they have the cultural understanding and comprehension and depth of honoring that culture. And Stephanie Paredes is our wonderful storyteller as well as our cultural specialist. All of our productions have that. So people may not realize that Mexican language is very different than Puerto Rican, right, than El Salvadorian, than Cubano. And these are the nuances of really having authentic cultural experiences. We also want to emphasize this is a very family-friendly show. They're going to be children in our cast. We encourage not just the adults, but families to come out and then to engage in the dialogue and the Q&A after and ask the questions. Right. The two young ladies that have been working to perform, Sylvia, have grown leaps and bounds, and their sense of cultural pride and understanding their history is unbelievably right. exciting and yeah. wonderful to see. And even our non-Latino cast members have really been embracing that understanding, and that's what really art and theater from my perspective, it should be, is really bridging and creating an opportunity for dialogue mm-hmm. and openness and not perpetuating fear and ignorance.
Right. And one of the things I want to mention that we wrote the script so that it would be multilingual. So almost everything that the Latino actors say is in both English and some of it also in Spanish. I wanted a song. We wanted a song in this play. And Sylvia, this might interest you, and I hope you enjoy it. It was written by Eileen Garcia, one of our actresses, and it's going to be
wonderful.
Yes, it's going to be a work song, an original song, followed by a work dance. And so we wanted to make this because that wasn't part of the original story. But we wanted to make this story as authentic as we possibly could.
And just to piggyback on that, you know, we hear about Sylvia herself through the book and through the production. But what we get to see on stage is how much it was a family event, how much it was a family experience, that her father worked out by petitioning and pounding the pavement while her mother stayed home and ran a farm successfully. These are the cultural pieces of Latino pride that we want to also emphasize, that we all, our family life and the unity of our family is very important to who we are in our cultural identity and in American identity as well. So this was a very wonderful piece for us to put together and include the bigger perspective.
Well, I want to talk about desegregation and sort of resegregation, because if you've heard Sylvia's story in recent years, you might have heard her on NPR. You might have heard that story there, and they covered not only desegregation but resegregation. Maybe you saw Sylvia when she got the Presidential Medal of Freedom back in 2010, 2011, Sylvia?
Yes, that's correct.
Don, you want to weigh in? Go ahead.
It's 2011.
2011. Yeah. Well, and congratulations on that, Sylvia. I think,
thank you.
You know, what a beautiful honor. But I'm also, you know, seeing the NPR reporting, and I'm seeing the story of judges taking up cases on desegregation across the country. You have, let's see here, Jose Cruz, I was looking at Cleveland, Mississippi. A federal court has ordered the Cleveland, Mississippi School District to merge its majority black secondary schools with historically white schools to end a five-decade legal battle to desegregate the city's schools. And the judge says in that case, you know, essentially, freedom of choice in some parts of our country, Cleveland, Mississippi being one of them, doesn't work because we resegregate and we are seeing more division now than we did 50 years ago. And then I pulled, Jose, I pulled some, actually Megan Mack, our producer, pulled some data for us. So let me go ahead and read some data here, and I want to get Jose's take on this as a Rochester School Board member. Here's the Rochester City School District, the latest data. 59% of students are African American, 27% Latino, 10% white. That's Rochester. Then we pulled three districts nearby. Take Greece, 67% white, 12% Latino, 14% black. Pittsford, 79% white, 10% Asian, 4% Latino, 3% African-American. Brighton, 71% white, 12% Asian, 5% Latino, 7% black or African-American. Jose, what do those numbers say to you?
Well, I think what it basically speaks to is that, the segregation is based on income inequalities in this community. The city of Rochester has the responsibility of basically housing and educating all minority and impoverished people in this county. And that's what it tells me. And what it tells me is that if we're going to get beyond that, we've got to, A, accept that, and, B, look at how do we meld with other districts. You know, and probably the most controversial thing you could talk about is metro anything in this community because, you know, all of a sudden you get all kinds of commercials. But I think at some point in time we've got to come to the realization that we've got to be able to desegregate our schools by opening up other schools and other districts and be able to have families, allow them the choice of being able to send their children to suburban schools. And most interesting now recently we're seeing is that we have suburban families who are very interested in sending their children into public schools here in Rochester. We're seeing a little bit of that as well. So if we're seeing that, how do we begin dealing with that and bringing about that as a possibility? Part of it is the whole issue of poverty in this community. Our families can't afford to rent or to buy properties outside of the city of Rochester. Therefore, obviously, you're going to hobble together a community that can't afford to leave or move out. So a lot of that has to do with income disparities in this community.
Could you see a scenario where a judge in our area is essentially looking at things the same way that this judge in Cleveland, Mississippi is, by saying, I don't know if school choice is a good idea if we are going to segregate the same way we did 50 years ago. Could that happen here?
Well, it could happen if we can get Sylvia Mendez to become a judge. And Doña Sylvia, yes, we would have you become a judge. And we'd have you rule on that and see.
But, Jose, some people don't like that. Some people say, okay, but you still have to have freedom to live where you want to live.
Well, and I guess that's part of the discussion because obviously you can't come up with an answer immediately on that. But I think there has to be that discussion within this community in terms of what's in the best interest of our entire community, not one particular town or village. And I think once we can get to that point, then I think we're going to see some changes. But, this community is really interesting. So this community has proportionally the most agencies per capita anywhere in the country. We have a tremendous amount of money that is that is donated every year for causes, like our United Way. So we have all of these different things. We have a tremendous amount of resources. We have colleges. We have all those great things. And Sylvia, what we're lacking here is just the absolute fundamental will to sit down and say, we're going to make these changes. And that's where it lies.
Sylvia, how do you feel about judges in 2016 trying to desegregate and step in and say, we have to do something because we've resegregated and we've gone backwards?
Well, I see it happening. Everybody's talking about it. All the organizations are talking about what are we going to do to get rid of this segregation that we have. But one of the main, just like he mentioned, one of the main reasons that this occurs is poverty. Our economical state that we have in the United States right now. Because what Brown and Mendez did, they were able to get rid of segregation and by law, and anybody can go to any school they want. But the thing is, if you're poor and you can't move out of in the inner cities or wherever and going to where the schools are better, that is a horrible thing that's going on right now. And I think that's one of the main reasons I go and speak to the students about the importance of education. I want them to know that if they're educated and they get good jobs, they will be able to move out of those inner cities, especially the minorities, and have their children go to whatever school they want. And we will not have this segregation that we have right now. It's all about getting our students educated and to stay in school, especially in the minorities. The Latinos right now are the first ones to drop out of school. And it's so important that they know about this case. And thank you for this beautiful play that you have put together. I think that this is going to inspire a lot of our students, Latino students there, a lot of our minority students, to know about their heritage, you know, their heritage, their history, the Latino history that they have here in the United States, and to inspire them to stay in school and to, because this is a wonderful country that we live in, that anybody can have that American dream, but they have to stay in school and they have to get educated, and they will be able to get these wonderful jobs, and they will be able to move out of these areas that are poverty stricken, and they can go to any school they want to, and maybe that, or move out of the areas of those poverty areas and live for in integrated sections, because that's one thing that we still do have, that anybody can live anywhere they want to. It's just that we don't, that a lot of people don't have the money to move and go to where they want to go so they can be in better schools and integrated schools. But at the same time, right now, I know that the White House Advocacy for Education is working on trying to find solutions to how do we get rid of this segregation that we have. And one of the main things that we're working on very hard is to get the schools that are segregated to become equal, because so many of them have been so unequal in getting the money because of the money to educate the students. Some of these segregated schools that you see right now don't have enough counselors. They don't even offer AP classes so the students can go on to college. Sometimes students think they can just graduate from high school and go on to college, not even being aware that they have to take certain classes, that they have to have a certain high standard, that they have to have high grades. So even though we are segregated in so many areas right now, we are still working with those schools and those districts and trying to help and fund those schools and fund the segregated schools so they can have the same equal opportunity, the students in those schools that they're getting in other. Of course, they won't have everything, but at least we're trying to do something about it. So it's not that people aren't aware of what's going on. People are aware, and we just have to all work together to try and get rid of this horrible illness that we have, the segregation of schools right now.
You're hearing
segregation in schools right now.
Hearing the voice of Sylvia Mendez, who's been our guest for the hour, her family story in Mendez v. Westminster helped set the stage for Brown v. Board of Education. And even though we all know Brown v. Board of Education, most of us have never heard of Mendez v. Westminster. Look it up. A remarkable family story told in not only the book Separate is Never Equal, but the play that is coming this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, to the MUC, the Rochester Latino Theater Company, in partnership with BART Productions, is presenting Separate is Never Equal. Four chances to see it Friday, two shows on Saturday, one show on Sunday at the MUC. Sylvia's going to be here for the Friday show. Tickets are almost sold out, but you got a chance to see it all weekend. I just want to respond to one more listener email, because I feel like this may be representative of some of maybe supporters of Donald Trump. I just want to read it. And by the way, this is an email that came with no name on it. But the emailer says, Evan, way to change the subject from illegal immigration that the caller brought up and not address it at all. Nicely played. Listen, what we were talking about was an earlier caller had brought up Donald Trump's comments about the judge and attacking a judge as a Mexican, as if that's a pejorative at all. I don't know what's wrong with Mexicans. But anyway, saying that the judge couldn't be trusted because of his Mexican heritage, even though the judge is an American, saying that Donald Trump's policies would cause anyone of Mexican descent to not be trusted in a legal scenario. And Paul Ryan himself and a lot of Republicans are saying that was blatantly racist. The caller that this email is referring to said, well, Donald Trump's not a racist. He just cares about illegal immigration. We weren't talking about illegal immigration. You want to save that for a different day? We'll talk about it. We were talking about his comments about a judge and what a lot of Republicans are saying about these comments specifically. So I didn't pivot away from that. I actually directed that caller back to the subject at hand, which is what we were talking about. So I just want to make sure we're clear on that. Okay, so we're just about out of time. And I just want to thank our panelists for spending the hour with us. And Jose Cruz, we've got a lot more to talk about on segregation and the work you're doing on the school board and what our community is doing. And we'll
Absolutely.
Do that continuing going forward.
I look
thank
forward
you,
to it.
Thank you for taking
thank
the
you.
Time to be here.
Thank
our
you.
Thanks to the creators of Separate is Never Equal, which you can see this weekend. That's Annette Ramos, Don Bartolo. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you. Gracias.
Great. Very good. A ti también. And also to Sylvia Mendez. Sylvia, my honor talking to you. I'm so sorry I didn't know your story until this week, but I know a lot of people are going to feel that way when they see the play. Continued good health. Happy birthday. And we'll see you in Rochester on Friday.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sylvia Mendez celebrating 80 years and her remarkable family story. Short break. More Connections next.